Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the June 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing Amateur Radio Insights by Kirk Kleinschmidt, NT0Z. More mentoring, more success. I carefully continued turning the adjuster. I initially thought that the pot was a 10-turn model, but I think it's actually a single-turn pot that doesn't have an end stop or is broken. The pot loosened up a bit after being twizzled, and there was indeed a setting of the pot that produced 2.5 volts on the aforementioned pin, exactly half of the supply voltage as predicted by the latest expert Elmer to weigh in on my issue. With the 2.5 volt reading displayed on the DMM, I quickly connected the scope probes to the sine wave output connector and, bright and beautiful, there was the 10 megahertz reference signal. Ditto for the square wave port. The chips were almost certainly fine from the start. It was the trim pot that had gotten goofy. With the trim pot somewhat rejuvenated, I tapped in the usual places. Nothing. With stable outputs, I repackaged the GPSDO in a 1980s cigar box. The flip-top lid would allow for easy access in the future, and the cardboard might even provide some extra thermal stability for the unit's built-in OCXO. I connected the square wave output to the external reference input port on the HP counter. The square wave signal had just a bit more voltage, and each output signal was near the minimum that was recommended by HP for my device. It seems that the 5328A likes a beefier reference signal than most. A distribution amplifier is in order, more later. Just like before, when I switched the counter to use the external 10 MHz reference signal, instead of showing all 8s, the dreaded indication that there is no external reference signal detected, the device counted and displayed normally. I measured the output of an inexpensive AADE brand OCXO frequency standard that is always powered up in the shop. It was 1.8 Hz low at 10 MHz, which is its stable frequency over time, as long as it's continually powered and is at room temperature. As I write this, the system has been stable for a month or so, which is good. Some takeaways. This journey took several months and paid dividends beyond having a working GPSDO. I could have saved time by buying a new GPSDO, but I would have missed out on a lot of useful learning and mentor connections if I had. New GPSDOs are affordable, but this type of skills acquisition is priceless. 1. The chips were probably fine all along. Dang. But by replacing them, I got myself to move forward with surface mount devices, which I had been wanting to do for years. Now that I'm not afraid of SMD because I successfully accomplished the repair and the chip swaps, despite the fact that it really pushed my personal envelope. 2. I relearned those old adages about why we try not to assume things in a troubleshooting environment. 2 of my key assumptions were wrong, which set me back, but forced significant strides in learning and capabilities. 3. I learned through experience that all of the cheap, knockoff liquid solder and solder pastes that sell for pennies on the name brand dollar via Temu seem to work just fine. My YouTube Elmers found the same. This was unexpected because while saving quite a few greenbacks, not everything sourced in this manner provides similar results. 4. Some devices that can use them need more powerful external reference signals. My HP counter doesn't care whether its external reference is a sine wave or a square wave, but it does want the signal level to be on the beefy side, especially when compared to modern gear. 5. Depending on the counter's external reference input circuits, the counter may load the GPSDO reference output to the point where the device really can't provide a reliable long-term signal. This can be remedied by using a distribution amplifier to send the reference signal to multiple devices. And if each channel of the distribution amplifier has its own gain control, it's easier to accommodate a mix of old and new devices while providing the proper reference signal to each. Suitable distribution amplifiers are easy to build from MMICs or common transistor gain blocks, or you can source an older CCTV video distribution amplifier for $30 on various auction sites, as these venerable devices have good channel isolation and the video amps cover 10 MHz with ease. Of course, you can also just purchase one. I like the BG7 TBL unit. 6. Having a handy non-satellite way to verify whether my 10 MHz GPSDO reference system is working properly is desirable, but well-used rubidium frequency standards, once affordable, are now quite spendy. Through our tax dollars, however, we already fund a $1 million frequency standard called WWV, which transmits a 10 MHz carrier, among others, that's accurate to a massive string of decimal places, way beyond my needs at HF. Receiving WWV in a way that makes it directly usable as a frequency standard in anyone's home RF lab requires a special yet simple receiver. The best example of one that I've found was designed by Don Kirk, WD8DSB, published originally in QST, whom I've coincidentally worked in several low-band CW contests over the years. Don's tuned radio frequency, TRF, receiver for 10 MHz uses a design language that was popular in the 1930s, before the Superhet era. You can tell it's special because the first circuit element connected to the antenna port is a 10 MHz crystal filter. I will describe it in more detail in a future column. 7. There is plenty of chaff online and plenty of bad advice, but if you can do a little or a lot of sifting, there is amazing wheat there too. And the quality and quantity of expert advice can help us reach new heights in all aspects of our hobby, or show us how to replace the suspension rods in our clothes washers. If we don't happen to have access to local experts in Elmer's, we can still access these amazing regional and global experts. My thanks go again and again to these online helpers, and my thanks go to you too, dear readers, because I happen to know that, in the time-honored tradition of amateur radio, many of you are generous with your time and expertise. Bravo! And now a feature article, Many Flavors at the Radio Feast, by Chrissy Brand. The continued success and longevity of radio is partially due to the industry's ability to act on and adopt ever-evolving technologies. This is key to keeping longtime listeners on board, while simultaneously creating other innovative and effective methods to engage with new audiences. TikTok and podcasts are just two tools that have become indispensable for radio stations over the past decade. Personally, I am as happy to hear radio programs on a vintage Valve radio as I am to stream them through my cell phone. Embracing all available options ensures you can pick and choose exactly what audio treats you want from the smorgasbord on offer at the table. While I still use many of my portable and tabletop communications receivers to tune to the world, I take full advantage of technology and am a great advocate of apps. I am rarely far from my Android cell phone, and I enjoy hearing the world through the Radio Garden app, which is only possible when I am outside of the UK. Appealing apps. Since its inception in 2018, I have used the Google Podcast app almost daily, usually late at night drifting off to sleep. Sadly, this app is being discontinued by Google in June, with the company encouraging users to export their podcast subscriptions to YouTube. I do use YouTube regularly, but for video content than audio, with the radio-themed videos I watch tending to be from historic and current ATV programs, documentaries about radio's past, audio snippets, and QSL card displays. I prefer to keep my podcast app separate from my video viewing. Therefore, I'm trying a range of other apps to replace Google. Currently, it looks likeliest that I will switch to AntennaPod. Using a podcast app has enabled me to keep track of many of my favorite radio programs. It is handy to be notified when a new edition has been published or been broadcast. For me, these shows include Deutsche Welle's Living Planet, Africa Link, and On the Green Fence, CBC's Spark, As It Happens, and Ideas. The content of these programs is self-explanatory and will probably already be known to TSM readers. There is an informative collaboration between CBC and the ABC, Australian Broadcasting Corporation, that resulted in a program called Stuff the British Stole. It commenced in November 2020 and has run for 3 seasons so far. Throughout its reign, the British Empire stole a lot of stuff. Today, the Empire's loot sits in museums, galleries, private collections, and burial sites with polite plaques. But its history is often messier than the plaques suggest. Journalist, author, and genetic potluck Mark Fennell takes you on the wild, evocative, sometimes funny, often tragic adventure of how these stolen treasures got to where they live today. These objects will ultimately help us see the modern world and ourselves in a different light. Searching on the Google Podcast app also allowed me to build a listening roster of current-day international broadcasts from what are mostly traditional shortwave stations. For me, these have included NHK Japan, TRT, The Voice of Turkey, Radio Algeria International, Radio Owaz Turkmenistan, Radio Ukraine International, Voice of Vietnam, ZNBC Zambia, and Democracy Now! I like my USA radio and podcast listening content to be on the quirky side. Ken Lane's Desert Oracle Radio fits the brief. A weekly field trip and meander through the Mojave High Desert with observations on nature, travelers, and often a foray into the supernatural. There are over 220 episodes. Is it well known in the USA? How many of you listen to the radio broadcast Friday nights on KCDZ, 107.7 FM in Joshua Tree? Welcome to Night Vale is another American offering, with a cult following around the world. I saw the show on the UK leg of a tour in 2022. It is zany and otherworldly, a work of genius, in fact, and a success of the independent podcast landscape. To see this weird radio station from a small, fictional desert town come to life on stage was an enriching experience. The characters and creators took a diverse and out-there audience into realms of fantasy and rapture. A program in similar vein that ended in 2020 was called King Falls AM. Its 120 episodes are available online. King Falls AM centers on a lonely little mountain town's late-night AM talk radio show and its paranormal, peculiar happenings and inhabitants. It is difficult to imagine many regular radio stations in the 21st century would air these programs, as they are a little offbeat. Thinking about it, somewhat ironically, Night Vale may have found a home back in the golden age of radio drama. I can see it being a good, if modern-day, fit with the 1970s CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Welcome to Night Vale could be a sibling to other old-time radio shows that you find uploaded online and that relive the nostalgia of the U.S. golden radio era, an act that perhaps brings the content to new generations. Perhaps I'm being over-optimistic on that last point, but for me, Night Vale certainly evokes that feeling of a family or friends sitting around the radio on a Saturday night, being entertained and spooked by creative programs and character-led acting. Of course, current-day radio drama is by no means lost in the 2020s. It thrives around the world, as evidenced by the annual International Radio Drama Festival, held each March in the ancient city of Canterbury, in the southeast English county of Kent. The following drama pieces were among this year's winners. Populist Radio by Stefano Giannotti, Deutschlandfunk Culture. The Sister of Job by Marta Rebsta, Polish Radio Theater. Dear Alter Ego by Ulrika Haga, Bavarian Broadcast. Short-form drama winners were To the Battle by Oana Criste Grigorescu, Radio Romania. The Line by Raluca Grumazisco, Portable Theater, Timisoara. Faxes in the Storm by Emily White and Synchromesh. And Arthur and Close by Resource Artist. If you dig around at the website, you can listen to many of the productions, some performed in English as well as other languages. The website is radiodramafestival.org.uk. There is also a good write-up of the festival at the unofficial website for the International Radio Drama Festival at suttonelms.org.uk. That's suttonelms.org.uk. Tuned in to German radio. As I wrote last month, this year's Radio Days Europe conference took place in Munich. A conference exhibitor that is a perennial favorite with me is Pure Jingles. They always have a sustainable exhibition stand made of what looks like cardboard and which slots together. Plants and vintage radios adorn the stand, one of this year's radios being a West German Nordmende Mambo with medium wave and long wave bands made in the late 1950s. Pure Jingles help stations with their broadcast and brand identity creation. Our studio villa is a sparkling river of creative flow streaming towards you. Our mission is making you stand out through groundbreaking imaging. Some of the organizations that they work with are Odyssey, iHeartMedia, Nordic Entertainment Group, Nova Entertainment, NPO, NRJ Group, ORF, RTBF, RTL Group, and YLE. The cleverest piece of conference marketing, well, it certainly enticed me, was at the XPLR Media in Bavaria stall. Unlike other exhibitors, there were no radios on display, no screens displaying software packages, no banners full of statistics on how to improve your station reach, branding, audience research, or analytics. Instead, XPLR Media in Bavaria had a pretzel stand, staffed by a handful of engaging employees. Intrigued delegates were given a cone full of delicious mini pretzels, plain, chocolate, and licorice flavors, and a card inviting them to download a company report that highlights current trends and innovation in the radio universe and shows how radio stations are using them strategically. The 1974 Steely Dan album title called Pretzel Logic actually means a form of twisted thinking, but this was far from the case with XPLR Media's hook to download their report. The report by XPLR Media in Bavaria deals with the trending topics of DAB+, AI in radio, and the power of local radio, and talks to experts from the Bavarian radio landscape. It documents how the medium of radio can face up to its future challenges with its own innovations. Because one thing is clear, in the digital age, radio cannot rely solely on its old strengths. During my time in Germany, I enjoyed visiting historic buildings, museums, statues, the countryside, and in my downtime, tuned to some radio as well. I had little use for the portable radio I took on this trip, as my accommodation always had a large television screen, with options of dozens of German public radio stations to choose from. Networks included MDR, SWR, and RBB. RBB stands for Rundfunk Berlin-Brandenburg, a radio and television entity that was founded in June 2002. It came about through a state treaty between the states of Berlin and Brandenburg. As a result, RBB is required to treat both states equally with respect to the regional content needs. When in the city of Potsdam, admiring the historic squares and palaces, I spotted an RBB vehicle branded with station logo and advertising Der Tag, the day, an evening news and feature program. RBB operates a number of radio stations, including Fritz, which is aimed at 14 to 24-year-olds, RBB Kultur, cultural content, Radio Eins, aimed at people aged 25 and older, Antenna Brandenburg, a public station for Brandenburg from Potsdam with regional information from the studios in Potsdam, Cottbus, Frankfurt-Oder, Perleberg, and Prenzlau, Info Radio, news from Berlin, and Sorbischer Rundfunk, a joint channel with MDR in the Sorbian language. I also visited an exhibition in East Berlin that runs until February 9, 2025, which examines the phenomenon of heavy metal music in the former East Germany. Titled Heavy Metal in der DDR, it displays clothes, guitars, radios, audio cassettes, photos, and other memorabilia. Youth radio station DT64 was established by the East German authorities in 1964 and aired Western pop and rock music, as well as that of Eastern Europe. In 1987, a specialist heavy metal program took to the air called Tendenz Hard bis Heavy. Many East German bands sent demo tapes to station presenters Matthias Hopke and Jens Molle, projecting bands into the limelight among metalheads. Not so rosy in the radio garden. While out of the UK, it was a joy to be able to use the wonderful Radio Garden app again. In the UK, its use is restricted due to licensing reasons, and you can only listen to UK stations. This makes Radio Garden next to useless for my and many others' purposes. It is also restricted in Turkey. Radio Garden has been banned in Turkey since January 2022 upon the request of the Radio and Television Supreme Council, RTUK. RTUK ordering Radio Garden to pay the license fee or to terminate their service in Turkey. Radio Garden, as I'm sure most of you know, is an unexpected result of a European Union project and went viral in 2016 and 2017. It is a non-profit Dutch radio and digital research project developed from 2013 to 2016 by the Netherlands Institute for Sound and Vision, by the Transnational Radio Knowledge Platform, and five other European universities. One of the additional bonuses of the application's development was opening the ears and eyes of new radio audiences. I am sure I was not alone in having friends of all generations who rarely listened to conventional radio, who liked using the Radio Garden app. Dozens of friends and family of mine across all generations, from children to 90-year-olds, enjoyed the novelty of Radio Garden and its ease of use. It opened up a world of radio to people that were unaware of or previously uninterested in exploring on conventional old-school radio receivers. I hope the UK issue is resolved soon. Perhaps a change of government later this year might help, and Radio Garden is allowed to operate again to its full potential here. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.